sitting in for Bill Bennett today on Morning in America. And we're about to turn to the author of a wonderful book called The Pity Party, a mean-spirited diatribe against liberal compassion. And the irony here is there is nothing mean-spirited at all about the book's author, William Vogley, who's the sweetest, kindest, most wonderful human being. Gosh, I sound like the guy in The Manchurian Candidate you'll ever want to meet. Bill to his friends. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for getting up early. How are you?
I'm well, Steve. How are you?
I am good. Some other time I'll ask you about how you came up with a mean-spirited diatribe against liberal compassion. Maybe it's because they deserve it. But I want to begin with this. The topic of the day, of course, continues to be Trump. I think that you are the first person some months ago to use the phrase anti-anti-Trump. I think you actually wrote that I am anti-anti-Trump. Could you explain that a little bit? And are you still anti-anti-Trump, or where do you stand right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote a piece for the Claremont Review of Books website, where I'm
senior editor, right?
Senior editor on the masthead and frequent home of your writing,
right?
And I made the argument that most of the bad things that have been said about Donald Trump are, at the very least, plausible. I don't dispute them. But Republicans and conservatives need to reflect on the fact that, given all the other alternatives, there were 17 people who started running for the GOP nomination. He was attracting attention throughout 2015. He's attracting votes throughout 2016. There must be something he's tapping that nobody else quite is. And, you know, we conservatives, we believe in markets. And if you believe in markets, if you believe that people are responding to something, then you have at least a duty to investigate what that is. And I think that there is a sense that there's a kind of fecklessness about the political operation, the government enterprise, especially with respect, this is what I wrote in this piece that's almost 3 months old now, with respect to national security, the fight against terrorism, and on the issue of immigration, which has been the great wedge issue that Trump has used to make progress within the Republican primaries and caucuses.
You know, Henry Olson pointed out in the first hour this morning something that I had missed. I mean, maybe I noticed at the time but didn't reflect on it. And that's that Trump was doing well, but he didn't really take a big jump in the polls to, you know, 40, almost 50% in some cases, until after San Bernardino, which wasn't an immigration issue as much as it was a national security issue. It was the sense that a lot of Americans think, gosh, our government cares more about foreigners than they care about us. And whether you think Trump's idea of a total ban on Muslim immigration is reckless or ill-considered, the message that a lot of people got was, here's a guy who is actually for us and not equivocal about it, right? I mean, did that strike you in a similar way?
Well, yes, except I would say that San Bernardino brought together the questions of immigration and national security.
Yeah.
The wife of the couple that murdered those 14 people had come in under a visa policy that President Obama, in his Oval Office speech a few nights later, vowed to review, and then he named the wrong visa policy. I mean, there was, and the White House had to put out a correction within an hour of the end of the speech. His Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, gave a speech to a Muslim group where she said that her greatest fear after San Bernardino, the top of her worries, was that there would be a backlash against Muslims, not the frontlash of violence by radicalized Muslims. I think that it was this combination. It's policy things. National security, immigration, but also sort of a political tone. Here are people who care more about striking the right balance, not hurting feelings, being politically correct, to use the term that gets talked about a lot in terms of Trump, more than they care about discharging the most fundamental governmental responsibilities.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, as we know, the Obama administration refused to use the word radical Islamist terrorism and refer to the Fort Hood shootings, where the Major Hassan was shouting Allahu Akbar, they refer to that as workplace violence, like he was just another disgruntled postal worker from 20 years ago that gave us those cliches, right? I mean, that, there's something so frivolous about that. Frivolous is too kind a word. It really is offensive, right, to any common sense person. Well, you know, there's let me switch gears slightly. You know, we know what Reaganism was or is. We knew what a Goldwaterite was if we go back 50 years. Is there Trumpism that you can make out in a coherent way, or is he just, is this all instinct on his part?
I think that there are efforts by people who are more wonky than he is and more theoretical than he is to try to bring together this, what is with him sort of largely sort of capably playing to the crowd, figuring out what people ought to hear without saying it, and then trying to pull together a rationale for it. I think, you know, in the same way that people who devised theories and wrote books about what Jacksonianism was probably went far beyond anything Andrew Jackson ever sat down and it sort of figured out. But I think there is a I think there's a core idea that there is a kind of a vigorous, assertive nationalism that is going to counter the transnationalism and the a sort of instinctive apologetics for Americans looking out for Americans first that makes sense of both what Trump is saying and how people are hearing it and responding to it.
I want to we're talking with William Voegele, the author of The Pity Party, a mean-spirited diatribe against liberal compassion. But also, Bill, I want to mention your first book from a few years ago, still very current in my mind, called Never Enough, America's Limitless Welfare State. And here I want to do a commercial plug for your most recent production, so to speak. It's our sister Salem host, Dennis Prager, does his Prager University. And he's just out with, 5 minutes from you, I think it is, on the question, government, is it ever big enough? So I'll just pose the question. I think I know what your answer is, but go ahead and tell our audience, is the government ever big enough?
And by the way, Never Enough has a marvelous foreword. I forget who wrote it. But,
I wasn't going to tell people that I wrote the foreword to your book.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It was you. Yes.
It makes it look like too much of a fix here, which it is, but that's okay.
I get your point, Never Enough argues that liberals, since really before the New Deal, have been arguing about contending that America's government suffers from deficiencies, that it's not doing enough to help the poor, to promote economic security. And the book and the Prager piece ask the question, an argument about deficiency presupposes a concept of sufficiency. There must be some idea there of what it means for a welfare state to have all the resources, the programs, the dollars it needs, for a regulatory state to have all of the power and detailed commands that it needs. And the question is there that sort of platonic ideal of the welfare state out there? And the answer is no, that every new perimeter is only the basis from which the next outward expansion is to be pursued. And conservatives then need to ask questions, sort of big global questions, not should we do more of this, should we do more of that, but of this entire apparatus that liberals have built over 84 years now since the start of the New Deal, is it working in general, overall? Is it working well? Is it using the resources it already has efficiently and effectively?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great questions you ask is, when was the last time you heard a liberal say, yeah, we solved that problem, didn't we, right?
That's right. We need there needs to be a sort of since liberalism, in theory, I mean, you go back to the famous FDR speech at Oglethorpe University about bold, persistent experimentation. If something doesn't work, set it aside, but try something. But it's that feedback loop that has become so frail within the liberal intellectual and practical project. If things don't work, instead of being quietly discharged and put out to pasture, they are they have a sort of a permanent life. They acquire constituency, both external and internal, and they go on and on and on. And that accretion of bad or mediocre or ineffective or outdated programs that sort of drags the whole enterprise down. And since liberals who ought to, you know, you would think that if these would be folks who would get up every morning and say, how can the government work more effectively? How could it use its resources to maximum impact? If for whatever reason they're not, then those of us who are skeptics about the enterprise need to insist on answers to those tough questions.
Yeah, you know, there have been, study after study, often by liberals like the Brookings Institution, that say that the Head Start program, which is, 50 years old, doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you propose to cut the program, you are called to be, who could be against Head Start, right? It's got a great Head Start. You would be a mean spirit. Well, you're a mean-spirited person, Bill, right, for being against Head Start. And every once in a while, I will see someone who comes from a liberal world, like Charles Lane of the New Republic once upon a time, who will actually say something sensible. And then 2 weeks later, you find out they're just about ready to be signed up as a conservative. I mean, there really isn't much reflection on the left about this.
That's right. I think for reasons that seem peculiar in some ways, the left, despite its general advance over 80 years, the fact that the on a per capita inflation-adjusted basis, social welfare spending by the federal government has grown steadily for decades at a rate of about 3% a year, compounded over and over and over. There is this sense of if we admit that even one of our programs
it all
really
comes to an end.
Mistake. Conservatives are going to pull on that thread, and the whole garment is going to come unraveled. Therefore, never concede anything.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm for unraveling the whole darn thing. But sadly, Bill, our time has come to an end. Thanks, Bill Vogley, for joining Morning in America, the author of The Pity Party, a mean-spirited attack on liberal compassion. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away.